Hello everybody and welcome to the latest episode of BetaCast. Oh yes, with yourselves truly, Simeon, and of course, never doing it alone, I've got Benji Hardcore with us.
How you doing? Oh, hello sir. Number three as well, huh?
I know, triplets.
Third time lucky, maybe this time I'll get it right.
Maybe this time someone will listen. So, well, in our ever-expanding family, where I like to make Ben slightly uncomfortable, now that we're on triplets, what is that, a third baby or a dog that we've now got in our abode?
I think a dog would be easier.
Yeah, we'll have a dog. Then we can put it in a cat flap. In fact, I did watch, there's a person that lives just directly below me, and they have a horse I'm assuming it's theirs, but it does seem to appear underneath where I live, because I live like on a suspended flat, and then people walk underneath my flat to get to their houses. But the horse decided it wanted to try and get up my very, very narrow corridor the other day. And when I came home, there was like this horse about four steps up my little stairway to my flat, and it was like, I can't get in and you can't get down. What do we do? This obscure little like squeezing through moment. Quite random.
Sorry, I'm completely digressing already this early. Yes. In, but why a horse? I mean, I've never heard a flat stairwell horse situation develop before. I mean, I'll be honest, I actually thought you lived sort of in a bit more of a, maybe not an urban area, but I thought you lived in like a, you know, maybe a outskirts of a city or something. It just doesn't seem like a horse would be.
I do.
So why have they? Shall we just start the episode?
Yeah. Moving on. So, what were you talking about today, then, apart from obscure horse tactics?
Apart from obscure horse tactics and urban horsing, it's a good title for a book. We're going to be looking at some news, the reviews of what we've been playing the last few weeks since we last got together. And obviously, today's theme is multiplayer, because we both agree that multiplayer has more or less died a death. And if we can rekindle the flame of split-screen multiplayer with a pizza amongst the next generation, then, you know, maybe we've done something worthwhile.
Yeah, should we go through let's go through the news and rubbishy stuff first, and then we can get on to just being grumpy old men.
That sounds delightful.
We've not even hit 30.
Starting off with some news, Counter-Strike Global Offensive has finally come out. I did get access to the beta because I pre-ordered, but in a travesty and a miscarriage of justice, I wasn't included in the very first beta. What I will say is, for price, you get a lot of game for your money. Absolutely. But actually, even though it looks better and there are some interesting new mechanics, I'm struggling to love it, to be honest with you. I mean, it's one of those, you know, it's anything from Valve. A new Valve title is always a lot of hype around it because, you know, they are very good at what they do, generally. And I had a lot of hope, to be honest. I enjoyed the original Counter-Strike and then Condition Zero and Source. I've been playing up until very recently. You know, just it's something you can jump into and play. I mean, obviously you've got to find your server, one where it's not full of basement dwelling maniacs who can shoot you through the head as soon as you peek around the corner. But the thing is, I have to own up, I haven't done my homework yet. I know that it is cross-platform, so it's out on consoles as well. The menu system, you can tell, is specifically been developed with consoles in mind, but it works okay on the PC, so it's not such a big deal. I don't know if the consoles and us PC gamers are playing together at the moment. I'm really not sure. But there's something different about the dynamic, definitely. It feels twitchier. I know the idea was to change the feeling of the game, because obviously it got to the stage where a very small minority of people were completely dominating. They were just jumping between servers and slaughtering everybody, and it was it was difficult to always find a good game. Especially because, you know, the interesting dynamic about that game is once you're dead, you stay dead until the next round. So if you're shot 12 seconds in by someone sniping you from the other end of the map, then there's really no enjoyment to be had. You know, when you're just watching your brains drip down a wall for three minutes.
Can you do anything once you are dead, or do you just have to sit? You're just like a spectator.
Yeah, you spectate. I mean, there are people. The good thing is about CS is that it's always been good for modding, and there are people who have enabled bots on the server, so when you die, you can leap into a bot. But weirdly, the system logs it quite strangely, because kills and money you earn and any achievements you get through Steam while playing as a bot are credited to the bot and not you. So if you crack that achievement you've been waiting for ages, I don't think it actually unlocks for you. But yeah, it's out. I believe it's $13.99 full price on Steam. It's worth a look. Maybe someone out there gets a bit more enjoyment out of it than me, but I feel, you know, I got respectable at Source, and this I just cannot seem to crack, and maybe it's because you've got all the codders and the Battlefield 3ers on the consoles who are already in there in the mix, and obviously they're quite an obsessive crowd, and maybe that's the case, but yeah, I'd recommend giving it a try, but a little bit disappointed, if I'm honest. A little bit disappointed.
Oh, hate it when that happens. I mean, just in general with beaters and things. How much do you think people actually take note of what you actually stick in a beta? Because I got the beta for Little Big Planet Karting, and it's actually, if anything, put me off buying the game now, because I've seen it at this stage and it was everything that I wasn't looking for in a game, because I've never seen a karting game move so slowly, or just the sense of speed be so slow. It felt like I wanted to get alongside and like push it along with my hand through the screen. Come on, Sackboy! And I'm sure, I mean, the actual theming and everything else is perfect, but if there's no sense of speed and no sense of urgency or anything like that about a karting game, then it kind of loses its general overall feel for me. But so everyone that I know of has said exactly the same thing, and therefore then sent off in their little replies, it feels like we're, I don't know, moonwalking speed. So I wonder how much people would actually take at the original beta, and would you have tried to have shaped it a little bit better if you'd got in this criminal injustice of not letting you allowed in the first beta?
Well, the thing is, at the end of the day, gamers like people I would put in the same gaming pot as you and myself, I think we agree on a lot of things when it comes to gaming. Sadly, we represent quite a noticeable minority now in gaming, and as much as I feel personally my feedback would have been valuable, I think it really would have been a drop in the ocean. I think you see it in lots of things, this pressure from a younger, more, for want of a better term, a more, I guess, Americanized gaming market. You know, they want what they want, and they want it now, and they want it on their terms. And you see it with things, Mass Effect 3, where they felt the ending wasn't what they hoped for. So they decided they knew better than the writers and the game creators, and demanded that they change the ending. It also happened, it completely ruined Star Wars Galaxies. I don't know if you ever had a try on that.
No.
But originally, it was one of the few games that had a genuine sense of community, because the problem with MMOs intrinsically is that everyone wants to be the hero. And if you're all in the same game, then you can't be the hero. And it was a game that appreciated that. There was a handful of Jedi at any one time. It was really hard to become one. Everyone else just had to socialize in the community or play their role in the great machine. And suddenly you're awash with 13, 14 year olds who scream that, you know, I've paid my money, I want to be a Jedi. So they changed it so that, well, yeah, anyone could be a Jedi, that's fine. Which suddenly the Jedi became really underpowered and everyone was one. So the in-game economy collapsed and then you ended up with ghost towns and a complete lack of items because no one wanted to play as anything else. And it's a dangerous thing, really. It's a dangerous thing, and that's why I really admire it when a game company sticks to the vision. But to be fair, Simon, I think the beta did put quite a few people off. But luckily, I don't think Valve have swung too much, but just enough to cause me a little bit of discomfort. You know, just to the point where I'm not enjoying the game as much as I sincerely hoped I would. When it comes down to you, though, with your beta, I would really hope that's something they'd resolve. I'm sure something like that would be so noticeable to the kind of people who play games like titles like that, that I sincerely hope it changes and I hope you stick with it, because I found myself saying it all the time, you know, it's just a beta, you can't judge the final title on it. But it's tempting. I know it's definitely tempting.
It is. You have to really remember that that's not going to be the final product, even though it's a couple of months down the line. And I will then probably go back for the demo to see what has changed. But there wasn't going to, that was going to be a day one for me. And now I'm like, because I hate it when companies all do this. There's about six karting games that I really want, all coming out in about a 3-week period. And Little Big Planet Karting was joint top with Sonic and Sega's All-Star Racing because I loved the original. And they're doing this F1 Race Stars one where they're making it into a big karting game. And obviously I'm a big F1 nut, so that'll be top as well. And now all of a sudden, that because of that beta, that has now slipped behind. And given the, because they're all coming out within a week of each other, those three, now it'll be Little Big Planet will be the one that I'll do as my mop-up. So, yeah. Interesting. My other big news that I was going to mention is also slightly Sony related. They've closed down Studio Liverpool.
I know, Psygnosis. I was devastated. I loved them since, I think it was F1 96 or F1 97.
97, which, yeah.
With Murray Walker in there getting really excited about the most dull stuff, but they captured him perfectly. It was wonderful. And yeah. Wipeout as well, they did, didn't they?
Yep.
Which I loved on the original PlayStation. That's really, really quite sad. I think it's a sign of what's wrong with gaming at the moment.
Yes. I mean, going down the list of games that they've done that I particularly love, Lemmings.
Oh.
The Lemmings series, that could potentially be no more.
That needs a reboot as well, I think.
That does. Although they've got one on the PS3, but they always keep redoing the same levels. I did like the PlayStation 2 version where you could put the eye toy in and then you had to balance your body to get the lemons over. That was quite good. Destruction Derby series.
Oh, that was brilliant in its day, that.
Love that. Roll Cage, if you ever played those games, they were great. That desperately needed a reboot for PS3 era.
I loved Roll Cage. That was that... that racing title where your car worked upside down as well that way, doesn't it? Yeah. I had a demo of that free with, I think it was Official PlayStation Magazine in the yesteryear of the late 90s. And I, at the time, you know, the money I had to spend on games was really small and I desperately wanted that title. And I made that demo last until the disc broke, I think. I played the demo almost nonstop. It was insane. It was such a good game.
Yeah, love those games. What else can I think of? Colony Wars. Did you ever play those games?
I loved Colony Wars, actually. I thought it had a really, really good narrative.
Yeah. Because that was a game that actually thought about its story and it all fitted properly. Another one that I can think of, Shadow of the Beast. Going way back.
It's tragedy, this.
And of course, all the Formula One games. Wipeout, as you were saying. They've done the first Toy Story game, if I remember. And also Alundra RPG.
Did they do Fade to Black? I don't think they did they? I think I'm making that up.
Ooh. Hello, Wiki. Let's have a look. I can't see it on there. That doesn't necessarily mean that they don't. Because obviously when you go back to things like Psygnosis, maybe because Psygnosis was around to about 2001, I think, and then it changed to Studio Liverpool.
That's right, and I knew things were going downhill then. It was like when Westwood Studios became part of the EA, it was just, no.
disgrace. I didn't realise they'd done G-Police as well, that's good games.
Oh, that's something, when we were talking about reboots the other week, that's the one title that I kicked myself for not bringing up afterwards. I genuinely thought G-Police was superb in just every way. It was design, execution, wonderful, wonderful game. And it was such a rich world they'd created without even... It didn't seem like they'd done it intentionally. It just... Mm. There was so much potential there. And especially now when, you know... I don't know if you heard, Si. It's not really video game related. But the people who made Big Brother are doing a new reality show where they're going to send some people to Mars.
Oh, God. It's not like that one that they'd done before where they actually just all stayed inside a little thing and they watched them through... a window for 2 weeks.
No. It's called Mars One. They've got loads of scientists on board, and they're actually going to send people to Mars. They've got letters from suppliers, the whole thing. So anyway, we're digressing, but you know, that's going to spark a whole interest in this whole, you know, red faction, G Police, living off world kind of thing. I think it'll inspire a bunch of kids, and it's a game that will be ripe for a reboot.
Hmm, okay. Talking of ripe, I've never heard of it, but now I want to seek it out. Part of the game is developed by Psygnosis, Bill's Tomato Game.
Oh, that sounds like a title built to last.
That is. That is. I've got a vision of Farmville, but apparently it says it was a obstacle puzzler for the Mega Drive, Atari and Amiga. So I'll have one of those on my ROM list, maybe. Thank you. So yes, disgraceful, end of the world. But I don't get why, because all of their games that they done were successful. Why do you close that down? Everywhere that I've gone, I've seen a real massive outcry that this is a huge, huge mistake.
Yeah, and it really is. And the problem is that you don't lose that kind of innovation. They may have turned over some staff, but I mean, at the core, the philosophy between studios is noticeably different. You can get a feel for certain games, like we talked about Bullfrog. You knew when you were playing a Bullfrog game, even if the logo didn't come up.
Yeah,
you know, you would know. And it's the same with the Psygnosis game, and it beggars belief. I know it all comes down to money, it all comes down to the bottom line and the chasing the casual gamer market. But they say it helps produce high quality titles, and it doesn't. It kills innovation. You're not rewarding people for creating something valuable for the medium. You're rewarding people for creating a clone knockoff that, you know,
destined to fail because it is a clone knockoff, so therefore it brings everything down further.
Exactly. I mean, there's so many studios, or not specifically studios, maybe titles, that have more or less been trying to emulate Psygnosis titles. I mean, I've played so many Wipeout clones, it's really not funny.
Yeah.
And none of them have been a patch on Wipeout. And, you know, I don't want to sound like a communist, but I think once you've got Wipeout, why do you need a copy of Wipeout? It's like, you know, the chocolate advert, why have cotton when you can have silk? I appreciate innovation, but, you know, up to a point it has its limits. You can't just... like we're seeing now with all the FPSs coming out, you can only follow the recipe so long with these little tweaks. You've got to innovate properly, or else everything stagnates. It's sad. But do you know what I can tell you that will cheer you up, Simon? Because I thought we should talk about what we've been playing.
Oh yeah. Go.
Yeah, I think you'll love this. I tried this week a title called 30 Flights of Loving. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I've bought it last night, and I want to play it, but it looks awesome. Well, how is it?
I would say it's absolutely fantastic. it really is. It's. I'll be honest with you, Simon, it's incredibly short.
I expected that, yeah.
But for a gaming experience, it's brilliant. The guy has done a fantastic job on telling the story. It's a really... bizarre experience. You come out at the other end sort of really, really quite impressed. The only thing that bothered me, I'm sure it might bother you at the end as well, because I don't mind giving the guy money. He's done a fantastic job, and it's really great to see something like this coming out. But for how genuinely short it is, the price really needs to come down. It needs to quarter.
Really?
Yeah. I think you can get away with £1 or £2, €1 or €2, but you know, I paid five for this, and when you think, you know, what you can get in the naughty secondhand bin, you know,
yeah.
You can pick up some sizable titles for £5 now. You know, you can go into,
that's true.
Is Game still on the high street? I don't live in the UK anymore, but you know, you can go into these stores, or you know, there's so much on Steam for less than €5 or £5 that lasts a lot longer.
I wonder if it's about the same length as Dinner Date then, because that's another one that I can think of that is a specific kind of story narrative that you sit through. And Dinner Date, I think I bought that for, I think it was £1.99, and that lasts about 12 minutes, and you can't make it go longer, you can't make it go shorter, because you only have a certain amount of things to click. Once you've clicked them all, it's done, and you don't actually do anything, which is a bit annoying. But it's good that those kind of games do come out, because, and I'll always support the indie community. You know, I'm a big indie person. So, yes, I bought it, but no, I was ready to play that actually this afternoon, because I wanted to review it for my site. So, cool.
I really think you'll love it, Simon. The other stuff I've been playing, because I've stuck with indie this week. I thought you seem quite unknowledgeable compared to you, because I'm always playing these big titles. I have been playing the beta of a game called Crashtastic, and anyone who's listening, and this includes you, Simon, as soon as this is done, go Google them and then give them your money, because just throw money at them. It's wonderful. It's really, really good. Essentially, you have a series of sort of components, you know, wheels, shock absorbers. The only method of propulsion is rockets, which I think is fantastic.
Hey.
And essentially, you have to create a vehicle to complete a task. And obviously, you have to, as the challenges change, you have to amend and restructure your vehicle. The physics engine on it is wonderful. Really, really good. And the creator genuinely seems to care about the game. And he's upfront about what he thinks needs changing. He takes the community's feedback on board and tweaks it and tweaks it. And I think it's due for full release not too far away from now. And I really suggest anyone go and try it out. I think it's an open beta, so go give it a shot. You've got to get your little stick man across a chasm and you know, through a chicane and all these different things. And it's an educational tool as much as anything else. You learn a lot without even thinking about it. And while we're on that, another thing that I would recommend people go out and try while it's still in beta, automation. This is sort of the spiritual successor to the old Detroit titles from the Amiga.
Ah, yes, I've heard of this.
Where you run a car company, but it's so in depth, Simon. It's amazing. You've got your research and development department, and then you literally build your own engines. So you start out with an engine block, and you decide, you know, how many cylinders, how many valves, and then you switch and change components. You change which fuel it runs on. You change the materials it's constructed from to get different engines for different jobs. And then, you know, you test them on the rig. Sometimes they explode. Sometimes they actually work. And I found it really, really enjoyable. I've not even got to the car design stage yet, or the company running. But the engine builder is what you can test at the moment.
Yeah.
Really good fun. Really good fun. Obviously, doesn't cost you anything. And the game itself looks like it's going to release for a very modest price when they come through. And I urge everyone to go out and support it. It's really good. They're going to incorporate a motorsport aspect, so you can create an engine for motorsport. Obviously, they can't call it Formula One for trademarking reasons, but yeah, that's something that anyone who genuinely cares about motoring or motorsport is gonna really enjoy. You know, you get to create your dream car, and it's not like you're restricted. It's not like there's, you know, 100 possible combinations of car designs. There's literally thousands and thousands. So yeah, go support it. Go support it and try all these things out, because they're wonderful. I've had a great gaming week. How about yourself?
Wow. Yeah, actually, I was just jotting that down in a text file so that I can check that out afterwards, because I have heard of it, but I didn't realize it went into that much depth, actually, because I thought it was I was veering off somewhere else that was a bit more company based orientated, but yeah. Oh wow. Exciting. My gaming week. I got Retrograde for the PlayStation Network. I believe that is an exclusive for it. It's a really nice twist on Rhythm Action games, which I love my Rhythm Action stuff. It's basically a 2D shooter that is constantly running in reverse. And you've got to hit the buttons as the bullet comes back to your ship, and they're all on different lanes, and therefore, and then because the bullets are coming back to the enemy ships the other way, you've got to move up and down the tracks to avoid them as you go. It's really weird, and it's a really funky twist on everything, but it really works. I love it.
That actually sounds like a really great concept. I'm going to try that out myself, actually. Retrograde.
Yeah. Yeah, it's for free if you're on PlayStation Plus. If not, I think it's $7.99, which sounds a bit steep. But, I'm loving it. And each, it starts you off on, like, the beginner's mode, and there's only two rows of stuff. Then casual brings you three, and it keeps on going 4, 5, 6 upwards. Because in theory, it says you can play it with your Rock Band instruments. I was like, oh, wow, that's so coming out.
That sounds like a great concept for a music video as well, you know.
Yes, which is very telling for myself, actually. I was thinking, So, yeah, that is awesome. I'll give that 2 full thumbs up, because it is a great game. Sticking on the whole musical side of things, I've also been playing a game called Symphony, which is a indie title from Steam. And you know how I like things like Audio Surf and Rhythm Zone and stuff like that, where you can put your own MP3s in and then it kind of generates a level that you can kind of do various stuff with. Symphony basically turns it into a bit of a Space Invaders game. It's like a whole area shooter, and then you collect stuff, and then your score gets uploaded onto a leaderboard for however you completed that song. But at the end of each song, it's supposed to generate a new instrument, providing you get to the end of the song. A new weapon that you can then add onto your ship and customize your ship. So it's a bit like Beat Hazard, but extreme.
That sounds actually really quite enjoyable. I'm not as big on rhythm action games as you are and the like, but that actually has spoken to me. I like innovation like that, and little quirky additions to these kinds of titles. I think it's really good. You get to see people's creativity at its best.
Absolutely, definitely. And the only other thing, well, I'm gonna go for three. I'll mention them very quickly. English Country Tune is a new game that came out, I think it was last week, but I've only just been able to rebuild my brain back together again for it. It is one of the most hardest puzzle games I have played in ages, and it's made by a company, I've forgotten their name now, but all they've ever done up till this game was do freeware stuff, and this is their first game that they've done. It's out on Steam, it's about £3 something. It is so hard, my brain was crying after like level 4. Basically, you have to, you're like this flipper, and you've got to move various balls into different coloured blocks, but gravity is directional. So if you push it one day, it will just continue travelling until it hits something. And that can be up, down, left, right, over an edge. And I was just like, ah! So it might be that you only need to move it one block in one direction, but then you have to traverse all the way round the level to get back behind it again.
I was like,
yeah. So I was like, my brain! So yeah, anyone that wants their brain fried, go for that. I've also been playing Asura's Wrath, which isn't new, but awesome game for the PS3, Xbox 360. It's basically they've taken loads of different artists from Japan, like to do anime stuff, and they've like made a whole entire season, and it's of like a cartoon type thing, but it's done as if it is different episodes, and each level is about a 20-30 minute episode that you play through, and you spend just as much as time watching the game and enjoying the story, with like real time things to press to keep it all going, and then you'll have like big boss battles to do. But yeah, the whole vision and direction of it is amazing, and yeah, it's one of those games that you don't play necessarily for the gameplay, you play for the experience. So I will give that two hearty thumbs up. I'm about halfway through that, loving that. And the last thing I'll mention is I imported from Japan for my PS3 something called K-On! High School... I was going to say High School Musical. Ah! I forgot.
Don't say that.
But it is a little bit like it. It's, again, a rhythm action game. It's a PSP remaster, which I didn't realise means you get no trophies. Bad. So, wasn't impressed with that. But it's a rhythm action game where each... It's basically five schoolgirls all get together in a band and have a jolly good time. And you get to... Each instrument has its own like path, a little bit like Rock Band, but instead of it having its own little like tracks to play on, it's got a music staff going across the bottom. But yeah, I yum it up because I just love rhythm games.
You certainly do. Just to wrap up the news, actually, there's something I wanted to mention quickly. I just thought we need to do a bit of naming and shaming. I saw we both own Civilization V, do we not?
We do. Although you may be able to see on Steam, I think I've played it about 4 minutes because it's one of those I need to go back to.
Right. I mean, definitely it's brilliant. The whole one unit per hex thing is exactly what it needed. It's brilliant. What bothers me is that they've now released the expansion pack, Gods and Kings, which is exactly the same price as the original game. So, yeah, you pay $29.99 on Steam for the original game, or at least over here on the mainland you do. And then the expansion is $29.99. Now, that would be okay if that was adding something really, really wonderful. But what it does is it completes the game. Things like religion and, you know, some of the staple civilizations weren't included in the original game.
No.
So you've got to pay twice to get, you know, I believe it's the Celts is the main one. It's an extra €5 if you want the Vikings, and I just think that's terrible. You can't just milk people like that. It's you're paying an extra €30 to complete a game that should have been complete in the first place. So shame on you, Firaxis and 2K Games. Not happy about that. That's very naughty.
Bad. It brings across that whole thing of when is DLC really DLC? Like when you have to pay for stuff that's already on the disc. That annoys me. I own a disc, therefore I feel I should own that. And I can kind of see where some developers are coming from. If, say, I'm trying to think of a game that's done it, Nailed, which was like a bike racing-y type game. Some of the ATV games, they release a game at a budget price with not everything included in it so that you can get access to it. And then if you really like the game, then you've got this DLC which makes it a bigger, better game for the people that really want to go for it. I can understand that because it lowers your price point, it lowers the general budget of things coming in, and it can get more people into stuff. But if you're releasing a game at what is quite blatantly full price, and then going, oh, we'll just complete it now, play again, bitches, it's all going to be like, oh, here's my wallet, rape it now. No.
Yeah, that voice you did there, you sound like the chairman of EA. That's wonderful.
Give me more money.
That's exactly what he sounds like. Have you met him?
Who we are one.
One and the same.
Oh dear.
Well, shall we get down to the meat and veg of today's episode?
I tell you what, I am ready for dinners. Let's get to it. So, multiplayer.
Yeah.
Yo, players.
Multiplayers. Yeah, this is something I think is really important for us to touch on, actually. Because, you know, if I were to ask you, Si, you know, what in your memory has been some of the greatest multiplayer titles you've played? My gut feeling is that your response won't include anything with online multiplayer at the moment. But perhaps I'm wrong. You know, you don't let me influence you on that, but...
Am I allowed to include sim racing? Because I would say sim racing, but if that's taken, obviously that's how we met through sim racing. Aside from sim racing, where we're doing the big leagues and stuff like that, yes, I would have to go offline.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, sim racing is different because it's competitive in a different way. I think it allows like-minded people to just get along. I mean, it requires such a level of dedication to sort of improving your lap times and knowing the ins and outs technically, things like setup, that it attracts one specific kind of person, and that kind of person gets on well with his peers generally. But I'm exactly the same, because I really struggle to think of a game that I have genuinely enjoyed playing online.
Trackmania. That's the only thing I can think of. Sorry.
You've brought that up, and I'm glad you did, because I did enjoy Trackmania, but it's not something that I put hours into. And then I think about MMOs, and truth be told, I don't think I've ever truly deeply enjoyed an MMO. I think they're all fundamentally flawed in some way. I mean, they all feel quite sanitized, I think it's the only word I can think of. It feels almost as if they tell you you've got freedom to do whatever you want, but you really don't. It's become quite an antisocial gaming platform as well. No, so I would definitely say my best multiplayer memories. I mean, obviously, I enjoyed the Super Nintendo and the Mega Drive, but I think my best were around the time of the original PlayStation and then latterly the original Xbox, because I think, but really, that was down to the age I was when those platforms hit the market. But some of my... I've looked at the N64. I think the N64 is the greatest multiplayer platform. I mean, who calls themselves a gamer can't remember things like GoldenEye and Perfect Dark, which were, you know, even if you weren't a shooter fan, they were just incredibly enjoyable. If I had to lay money on what I thought was the best multiplayer experience... it'd be a close push between the original Halo and, bizarrely, WWF No Mercy on the N64. There's a really good reason for that, because it's a game where you get your mates round, you have a couple of cans of lager, order a pizza in, and it's just silly enough to be conducive to a good group atmosphere. You know, you've got the stupid costumes and the stupid flamboyant entrances, and you know, you make your own little people, and you know, you hit each other with ladders and stuff. And it's for a bunch of guys on a Friday night, you know, if you happen to be having a lads night in, it's really good. And we played that game to death. None of us liked wrestling. It was just the title itself was so enjoyable. There was that. And also, I think a third contender would be, you might have to help me out here, Simon, about what it's called. It was a collection of mini games on the Xbox.
Ooh.
And it was basically a party game.
I'm not an Xboxy person, because I'd have gone Bishi Bashi Special or a Mario Party or Muppets Party Cruise, maybe. Would it be the Muppets in it?
Anything with the Muppets in it is good.
Muppets Party Cruise, ultimate party game, best one ever, love it. That was a PS2 Xboxy game. I can't think of Xbox party game ones, to be fair.
Do you know, I'm going to look really stupid now, because I prepared this big speech about how good it was, and now I can't even name the thing.
It may come to me as we go.
But, I mean, another one, actually, was Super Smash Brothers.
Hey!
But, you know, that there is a collection of games that I think I could still play with my mates today and get the same level of enjoyment out of.
Yeah.
And I know the biggest criticism of split screen has always been, oh, I've got to work in this tiny little corner of the screen. It ruins the resolution and the graphics. But if that's all you play games for, then I think you're having a very soulless experience. I think I fall quite strongly on two sides of the line. I say either I want an excellent story and a great single-player experience, or I want good split-screen multiplayer. I'm not bothered by online multiplayer that much. And I don't see the point of multiplayer where you spend the entire time taking abuse from a 12-year-old. I think it should be a social thing. It should be about interacting with your friends or meeting pleasant new people and enjoying it the way it was intended to be enjoyed. And for that, you really do need split screen, I think. I don't think anything will ever beat split screen.
There is something specific about actually having your competitors in the room with you. Because when you were talking about MMORPGs, my experience of it is having my friends that I'd rather have with me all having to go home and log in, and then we all meet up online. I'm like, great, you've just got yourself four copies of us all buying the same game that we'd quite happily all play together. And I'm sure that's why one of the reasons why they've done it. Also, surely it's one of the escalating costs that's ruining a little bit of the, like, or hiring up the budget is all of this online stuff. Why can we not just have some good split-screen action? And some games do it quite well and do both. Motor Storm Apocalypse is one that I can think of, which has great multiplayer split screen, as well as actually having some fairly decent online stuff as well. I just think that part of what makes us a gamer, and I don't think that us being our ages, in our 20s, people in our 30s, I really do think the demographic of us is bigger than what people let on, and it's everyone chases the 18 to, or the 13 to 18 market, because they're supposed to have the most expendable money. But we've grown up with games, and we're the first generation to have now become adults that are gamers, and I really think that our pound is being seriously misrepresented and undervalued, and I think part of that is the reason why we're having a bit of a smashdown on the market in gaming in general. And we want things like an enjoyable story, multiplayer experience with people around us, shock horror. I'm going off on a rant now, sorry. I'm organising a gaming Olympics that's coming up around my place. Everyone's invited, come along. No, not really. it's been very difficult to have a decent balance of games across all different platforms, because as soon as you hit this generation, the stuff that I would say is considered multiplayer party type games, it's all online, and you can only have one person on this console doing it, so therefore it doesn't lend itself anymore to this community gaming spirit. And so I've had to fall back to the 16, the 32, the 128-bit eras, and yeah, it's and last night I was playing Need for Speed The Run, which I know, sorry, but it's I wanted to go online just to see what online was like. I had to sit there, because there's no mute button on that game, and listen to someone quack and moo and scream. And then someone else had their baby crying in the background, someone else was listening to Awful Music, Nicki Minaj, whatever her name is, and someone else was just going, I just took your ass out, I just took it, the entire time. And I think I lasted about two races and thought, I cannot stand this anymore, and off I came.
Well, the problem is that Need for Speed in general, since what was the one that came out around 05, 06, the one with the modding, and you know, you've got lights on your cars. It was the first, I think it was the first title in the series that wasn't just sports cars or racing against the police. It was a bit more RPG. You drove around the town and you bolted bits on your cars.
Yeah,
made it look like you crashed into Halfords.
That Wanted. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it was Most Wanted. That kind of game, in my mind, attracts mostly two kinds of people. Obviously, I mean, there's the people like yourself and me who bought it for, you know, it's something new, let's give it a try, or, you know, maybe just to see what the racing experience was like. But the two biggest groups it attracts are people who actually modify cars in real life, or people who would like to modify cars in real life.
Mm.
And they are invariably not the sort of people that we would socialize with. I'll stop myself there. They have a very specific internet hard man mentality. They like terrible music. And I know this is a shocking generalization, but it's true. I spent a very long time trying to get into enjoying online gaming because, especially now, I live a long way away from my friends.
Mm.
You know, we can't have our Friday night gaming sessions anymore. So we have to use MMOs, we have to use modern titles. And it's really put me off. People always say that you can't, you know, there's freedom of speech, you can't censor the community. You know, people have paid their game, they should be able to do what they want. But I think when you start being disruptive to other people's enjoyment, I think there has to come a point where, you know, game makers say, look, you know, yeah, you've bought your game, but you've broken the rules.
Yep.
And more effort needs to go into the community. And that's what I always loved about sim racing, because maintaining the community was incredibly simple. You know, even down to if someone showed up. I remember, you know, I used to run a team. I once got an application from a driver who was... who was asking to race under the name Vin Diesel. And I immediately said, go away. Go away and never come back. Never come back. Because, you know, it's horrible to judge, but I knew it was a sort of person who wouldn't get his head around the technicality of it and just thought it was another arcade racing experience. And when he didn't win, he'd drive the wrong way and crash into everybody and have a tantrum. And I just...
Yep.
And the community sort of policed itself, but sadly we are a minority in a lot of online gaming communities these days. I think it's down to the game developers to police it a little bit and be a little bit more mature.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know, have you ever used those kind of report buttons that you can get sometimes when people are just being absolutely stupid? Because I've done it once or twice, but you never really know whether or not, I suppose it's good in a way that you don't, because otherwise people would just hit the button for everything and anything that's going if they want to be that kind of person. I wonder what actually happens and what kind of route people go down to try and police the online community, because if someone's sitting there screaming, I don't know, racial abuse out all over the place, and everyone surely should be hitting that button, and I wonder if people actually do.
Yeah, I mean that's something. I mean, I know on Xbox Live people tended to mark down people who had beat them.
Yeah.
On the basis that perhaps they thought they didn't win fairly, even though they inevitably did. You know, there's a very strange sort of trigger mentality. Some people, in certain circumstances, I'm not saying they're permanently a bad loser, but, you know, if they lose in a way that they don't consider to be sporting, they'll be quite unsporting in their response to it. And I actually... raced on Formula One 2010 with a guy from the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the nicest, most respectful racer I've played that game with, I think.
There's very few.
and yeah, they are. They're few and far between. And he's you know, always respectful. He's a clean racer and he's talented. You know, he's fast and he beats me every single time out, every single time. Mm-hmm. But I enjoy racing with him. You know, it's not always about coming first. It's about, you know, the experience of doing the race and, you know, racing at your level.
Yeah.
You know, because you were a driver a lot longer than I was in sim racing. Mm-hmm. But if you look at his Xbox Live profile, he's been rated down to 1 star. And basically, he's beaten people who are used to perhaps winning, and they've all marked him down, and he keeps being reported and stuff. And luckily, he hasn't had too much trouble yet, but I can only assume it's going to be a matter of time before he's, I don't know, getting temporary bans, or he's being contacted by administrators to answer for something he hasn't done. I think it's that the internet as a whole is, I think, far too chaotic, and I really couldn't even begin to suggest how you can bring some sort of order to it to ensure, you know, everyone has an enjoyable time. But I tell you who does have a good crack at it. If you play Max Payne 3, I don't personally, but no, if you do and you play multiplayer, they have a really great system, but they don't ban people because obviously you've paid your money. So what they do is, if you're found to be cheating, they only then let you connect in future to multiplayer servers full of other cheaters.
Yeah, excellent.
Or if you are repeatedly reported for racial or homophobic abuse, you're put onto servers with other people who do that. And it's a really good way of putting these people in their little cages and letting them throw their toys around and then letting the rest of the gaming community have an enjoyable experience.
That is, I actually quite like that. No, because I know we poo-poo because we are for the split screen and online is bad and stuff like that. You can potentially have some very, very good and fun stuff online, providing you weed out the idiots that are on there first. And that's one of the very few ways that I've actually found a solution that probably could quite happily work long term, maybe. Yeah,
I want other studios to roll that out across all their multiplayer titles in every sense of the word. I think I'd probably give Battlefield or Call of Duty a try, because I'm sure it's a solid title. It's the community that puts me off. If they brought that in, I'd more than happily give it a bash, I think.
Yeah. Because I don't even venture into those kind of communities because of the horror stories that I hear and from what I see spilling out onto other servers and things like that. So
I mean, YouTube has some wonderful videos of all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There's one guy as well, and I'll credit them because it was wonderful actually. His name is Carl and he runs lifepunch.com, and he manages a lot of a service for Garry's Mod, which is really, really an enjoyable title. And there was a young boy on there who was causing a lot of trouble. He was abusive. He was extorting other server users by pretending to be the administrator. He was basically just a colossal pain in the arse, and he banned the kid, and the kid called him on Skype voice chat to argue with him.
Nice.
And in the end, he said, "Look, if you don't want this ban to become permanent, I want you to put your mother on." And there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, but eventually he put his mother on, because he just couldn't fathom life without playing on these servers. And he was very respectful, but he explained outright to this kid's mother what the kid had been doing, that it's not acceptable, that actually imitating someone like that and extorting people, even online, is illegal, and that he just wanted to bring it to her attention. You know, he did it in a way that he wasn't sort of implying she was a bad parent or neglectful. No. He simply explained, you know, it's a new thing, these online communities, not everyone's up to speed with them. He said, you know, I'm fairly recent to it myself, and I just wanted to bring it to your attention that, you know, your son's behavior is not acceptable, and I have banned him. I don't want you thinking, you've paid money for a game for him that he can now can't play. I just want to explain to you there's a reason that he's banned. And she was she should be Mum of the Year because she took it with good grace. You know, she didn't, she could have quite easily been offended. She could have argued back with this guy. She took it in the spirit it was intended and gave the kid a complete and utter bollocking online. It was fantastic. And, you know, props to her. Really, props to her. I think if more parents listened to what their kids were shouting down the microphones and, and you know, explained to them, if you're going to do that, I'm not going to let you play. Because, I mean, this is how you end up, in many ways, I think, with a lot of the disaffected youth you hear, you read about everywhere, you know, because there's a lack of respect and they get away with it online because of the cloak of anonymity. And then it bleeds into other areas of their life and they feel that they can do this sort of stuff, that this behavior is okay. They can say what they want and it needs to be challenged. But anyway, we've got a bit serious there. Should we get back to the multiplayer?
Yeah, although, here, woo! I absolutely agree with that all 100%. Stand up for, I don't know, you could be mayor of whatever your local thingy is.
Your local thingy.
Yeah. Mayor of.
I love we use the technical terminology on here, because we're connoisseurs.
Absolutely. We're just trying to be verbal, running a podcast, and I come out with words like thingy. All is good in the world. But no, absolutely. And then we can... Don't get me on about society. Society. Oh. But no. Multiplayer. Like, but then I've also found with multiplayer seems to shift into little fits and starts. All of a sudden, it's like some companies are trying to do a little bit of an about turn. But once again, they've waited until the end of an era... or of a kind of whatever this generation, that's what I'm looking for, is coming to an end now, effectively, because they're starting to announce the Wii U and Xbox, whatever number they're going to stick on the end, and PS4 and Steam, if they're going to throw in their own console. All of a sudden, we've got all different Smash Brothers clones coming out. We've got the PlayStation All-Star stuff. And yes, that's going to be online, but it's going to have multiplayer as well on side. Starting to see some slightly more funny party games starting to appear. But like, it's like no one will dare take the initiative immediately. It's like, oh, we've bled it dry now. Now we can pump out some of these quote-unquote lesser titles. Oh, it just makes me angry.
No, I mean, it's understandable, but I think we're about to enter something of a console renaissance, actually, which I hope brings it back, because, like you say, there are rumours of a Steam console, which I really, really hope is true. I genuinely hope is true. The thing is about Steam is, I admit, they overcharge for their games. That is just a fact. You can't, you know, except when there's a Steam sale on, when the prices are frankly crazy, and that's wonderful.
Oh, yes.
But title versus title, you can find anything on Steam cheaper almost everywhere else.
Really?
But yeah, in my experience, maybe it's a European thing. The problem with being in Germany is there's still very strange censorship laws. Like, if I want Fallout, for example, I can only buy a low violence version that was only made in German. So, I have to play the game in German, or I have to get a friend from home to send it to me, and I buy them something in return. There's titles that I can see promos for in the Steam store that I can't buy because, for whatever reason, they're not allowed in Germany. It's the same on YouTube. We can't watch the music videos that everyone else takes for granted because there's an organization that represents German music artists, and they are extorting YouTube. They are asking extortionate rates per play. That is just, it's not workable.
That is so true, because when I run the Higher Plane Games YouTube channel on there, and the amount of videos that come back that where like the trailer or something has taken a cue of music, so many say this video is not viewable in Germany, and it will only be Germany. And I feel so sorry for you guys, because you guys miss out on so much.
Yeah, we do, and you know, it's a frustration. It's like we can't play Football Manager here, because the official license from the Deutsche Fußballbund, which is like the German Football Association, for the German team and their likenesses, is Konami exclusive in Germany.
Oh.
So either football games that come out that aren't from Konami have a fictional German team, or, you know, like they used to on the old Mega Drive titles where they change a few letters in the name.
Yes.
Or you just have to play a Konami title. And yeah, it's really disappointing because Football Manager is an excellent game. And yeah, it's that's what happens. But generally, I think a Steam console would be a wonderful thing because I like Steam. I like the advantage of not having discs to scratch, that I can download my game whenever I want, that I have constant access to support for it. It doesn't become corrupted. If it does, I can just wipe the local content, download it again. It's brilliant. Plus, the Steam Workshop I've been really been enjoying as well. I know it's only on a few titles at the moment, but, you know, the excess stuff you can download. But the other thing is, I believe one of the crowdfunding websites has recently backed a independent console. And trying to remember the name of it. It's going to be the world's cheapest games console. Hello, Google.
Was that like a Kickstarter project or something?
Yeah, I believe so. Here we go. Yeah, it's going to be called the Ouya. I can't pronounce it. Ouya, and it's. It raised $1 million in just 8 hours because people were that excited by it. And it's going to be an excellent platform for smaller indie developers. But it is going to have a few blockbuster titles as well, they say. But it's going to be incredibly affordable. It's going to be very, very small. About, you can fit it in the palm of your hand from the pictures I've seen.
Oh, yeah, I'm just having a look now. Yeah.
Which I think, as a console, will be right up your street, mate, because I know you're the world's biggest indie gamer. And I think it's going to start a console renaissance. I think people are going to put... Now there's more competition, there's going to be more incentive to put more effort into stuff. I mean, I think one problem was when Grand Theft Auto was no longer PlayStation exclusive, because then Xbox didn't need to bother with... offering alternate titles to attract people. You know, when everything goes cross-platform, then there's no reason to innovate. You just cash in on your share of the market. And something I was horribly teased the other day as well, because a friend of mine sent me a link to a news article that was confirming that Sega had lodged patents for a new controller design and certain electronic components that you would find in a home console. And I immediately got so excited. I was like, if they brought out another console, that would be just the greatest thing, the greatest thing. But sadly, they came out and confirmed that wasn't the case. They said, you know, we have lodged these patents, that, you know, these things are technology we're working on, but it is entirely for arcade machines. It's not for home console, which really made me sad, because if they returned, I think it'd really shake the market up. It really, really would.
Yeah, because wasn't they looking at one point at doing a handheld as well, Sega, a couple of years back?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the rumor, but the guy in charge of I think he's in charge of Europe and US for Sega. He constantly goes out there and he says, there will be no Shenmue 3, certainly not from us. And he said, people keep saying, do a Dreamcast 2. And he said, it's not going to happen. It's not on the cards. And I guess...
Didn't work that, first time, I suppose. So.
Yeah, I guess the development cost, and there's so much to lose if you get it wrong that it just scares them off. But, you know, grow some backbone, Sega. Come back, because there's a lot of people who loved your consoles. And... Yeah. I think there is a place for a new Sega console.
Yeah, there's not enough camps, I suppose, to sit in these days. And cross-platform, great, although you always I always worry with that you have to go to the lowest denominator. So if they ever included, like, PS3, Xbox, Wii, then everything must look like a Wii game, which is not fantastic. But
That's it, because I mean, as a serious, if you're a serious gamer, let's be honest, you need to be on the PC. Other than that, the only consoles you can credibly have are a PlayStation or an Xbox. But even they are moving now more towards not just the casual market, but the younger gamer market. Mm. I know you have a little bit of love for motion control. It's something I'm still not sold on at all. But I won't criticize people who do like it. But I think it's shifted what were the two big boy consoles into an area where they're ever more focusing on how they match up compared to Nintendo. Because Nintendo, once Sega dropped out, they were on their own in offering sort of these fun, casual, cartoony platform experiences and party games and, you know, the silly titles that you don't get on the other consoles.
Which I love. And,
yeah, I mean, I love them too, but I think there's a place for them, and that place at the moment has been Nintendo. And
yes.
They do it properly, you know?
Yeah. And I think the other thing that can be potentially very good is that where you've got the online, the XBL store, the PSN store, WiiWare, that gives you an access point to get those games in. Because, no, maybe they shouldn't always be £30, £40 titles that have got big budget graphics exploding everywhere, because that's not what they're about. And maybe there should be more emphasis placed on that. I know that means that if you go specifically onto a store, potentially you might not get as much return back. But you see games that are promoted properly through those kind of things, like Super Meat Boy was a massive success on XBL, although having watched the indie movie, seeing how they treated the indie developers was disgusting. Journey for the PlayStation, that's done over 1 million copies. And like the Walking Dead series, I know they're single player experiences potentially, but it may be by lowering down these kind of things and offering out multiplayer experiences to everyone and allowing another console to get into the market to kind of do that. It's, you don't want to be a jack of all trades, you need to have your own kind of independent way of dealing with things, I suppose.
You need your niche, you need to attract your area of the market. And the thing is, it's, they always seem to be moving now towards which area of the market is biggest.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's been proven time and again that if you've got a dedicated niche market, no matter how small, you can turn a profit from them. I mean, again, I always go back to them, and I mention them every bloody episode, but look at EVE Online. EVE Online appeals to, let's be honest, quite a small percentage of gamers. Even if it was 1%, I'd be surprised.
Yeah.
You know, generally, at its busiest, the server has 41,000 people on-ish,
mm-hmm.
which is a drop in the ocean compared to the gamer market as a whole.
Mm.
But that company has consistently made a lot of money out of that fan base because they know what their fans like, and they do it, and they do it very, very well.
Mm.
And now you have these conventions where people just a few weeks ago were flying to Las Vegas to meet the developers and talk about the future of the game. This is a game that's over a decade old now, if I recall. Mm. It doesn't wash with me, this idea that you've got to chase the biggest market. It's not the case. And I hope these new boys showing up forces, you know, Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo to review their position and say, let's decide what we can do really, really well, and then do it. On the other end of that, though, Simon, I know we should wrap up shortly, but I thought this is a good thing to go out on.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question, because I don't know if you're familiar with the big video game crash of the 80s, where because consoles didn't really have quality control. You had serial companies bringing out games, and there were so many titles, and a lot of them were complete and utter garbage that it was Nintendo that saved gaming with the NES and the Super NES, because they brought in, I think it was a chip in the console that you could only get from Nintendo, and they would only give it you once your game was approved for the console.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, the quality of the titles leaped. Now we're moving back into this area of independent developers, of this cheap Android-based console that we were talking about just a moment ago.
Yeah.
And Android's already in for criticism at the moment because a lot of the apps on the Android store are not reviewed, not very good. Some of them have malware in compared to the Apple store. Where I know a lot of people have a lot of hate for Apple, but as an Apple user, the reason I shifted to them was I don't want the stress. Mm. Yes, I know I can't open it up and tinker with it. I know I can't use all the software with it, but I don't mind them telling me what I can and can't use, provided what they say I can use, and it works, and it works well.
Yeah.
And it does. I've got to say, you know, my Mac has worked flawlessly. I've never had a tenth of the problems I had with Windows PCs. So my question to you is, even though I am on paper a fan of open source, but I'm a bit of a hypocrite because I don't use it, how do you feel that is going to affect gaming? Because I've just said, you know, we're going to have a gaming renaissance a little bit with all this extra competition, but is something like the Ouya, and God, will someone please tell me how to pronounce that properly, is something like that just going to become open to abuse? Because it's like, I suppose, the file sharing thing where, you know, people say, oh, it's harmless, I just download a few songs, a few games, but it's relying on philanthropy from strangers, you know, it's relying on people having good intentions, and it's not always the case. Do you think that's going to be a factor?
Potentially, yes, but then I think that the people that will go for an Ouya will be, it sounds like you want to punch when you say that, isn't it? I think the problem, or not the problem, I think the reason why it may not go quite so massively is because that will appeal, and that kind of console will appeal to a certain type of people who will probably already be technically savvy to the point where they understand what they're getting into. There may be a bit of a problem with quality control, but then I'm sure what will happen is that because that community will be so dedicated to what they want, you'll then have the community dedicated websites that will try and learn out and test things. And it would almost become self-sufficient, maybe, in a way, where you've got these big consoles at the moment who are pushed out into the global market and are so out there, and you've got shops that support it in retail just about clinging on, game, constantly closing things down, but there's still one or two kicking about. And you've got, I mean, you won't have an Ouya game in Asda, will you?
No.
So, therefore, they're not going to have these INGs, Metacritic, tosspotty people running around going, oh, look, my opinion matters most. It's going to be niche people because they're interested genuinely in the products. They want to make sure that it succeeds by promoting the best things possible, and almost become its little self-sufficient community in a way. And I think that will probably weed out a lot of stuff. But in the same context, I think that you will also therefore be open for much more different experiences. And like the Dear Esters and the 30... Flights of Love and those kind of extreme types of games that you cannot really define as a quote unquote game, that those are the kind of things that will end up being pushed out, and it will become a little weird indie genre all of itself, maybe.
Well, I think, you know, that can only add to the rich tapestry, I suppose. Yeah. I like your positivity on it. I never considered it as something that would sustain itself necessarily. I mean, Maybe having its own console legitimizes it to the point that it develops a bit differently. I think the problem is maybe I've just had bad experiences. You know, whenever I've downloaded something, either open source or, you know, back when I was a teenager and I was, you know, being naughty and downloading, you know, games, and I got so many viruses and problems and crashes and stuff that, you know, maybe I've just had a bad experience and it's jaded me towards the idea. But the way you describe it sounds, you know, it does sound exciting, and I genuinely hope that's how it pans out.
I think you're right, though. It can go one of two ways. I mean, I still have my ZX Spectrum 3 kicking around. It needs to have a match in place so that the wires go right, but it works perfectly fine when it's there. There are still people who release games for that now. And that is going to be such the smallest, nichest of niche. The niche is so anorexic, it's nearly inside out again. And, but again, what comes out now, because it's people who are so dedicated to that type of product, are they're really good things that come out, and they're still worth a quick bash. And when you go around worldofspectrum.org and you see what that came out in 2011, but no, they're great experiences and great things to have, and hopefully that kind of console will maybe harness that edge of things. Because looking down the list of things that are on there, things like Cannibolt, that's like a PSP mini or a weird indie one trick pony game, which does its one trick very, very well, and maybe it'll end up becoming one of those little bite-sized fun games. I don't know. It depends where it wants to put itself as to how that community will go, I think.
Well, I think that's been quite an in-depth discussion of
not just
multiplayer, but we've covered gaming at large. I think we've been quite efficient.
That's a whole sandwich of gaming activity we've just managed to cram in there. And I think we better wrap it up before everyone dies of boredom. Well, not of boredom, just of general stuffy stuff. So anything exciting gaming-wise coming up?
Well, next time out, I'm going to have played quite a few other things. I'm about to actually start... what's it called? I think it's called Parable, or it's somebody's Parable, and it's a Half-Life 2 mod, and it's like 30 Flights of Loving, except it's a narrated experience. So the narrator will tell a story and say, I can't remember the name of the character, you have to forgive me. Gary goes through the left door knowing this leads to the staff lounge, and you can go through the right door and the story changes.
Awesome.
And there's like several different paths through, so, you know, that's what I'm going to be trying out, and I'll let you know how I get on. How about you?
Fantastic. Well, I have now got over the fact that I couldn't go to Gamescom. Although, I did watch, because I'm waiting for Tekken Tag Tournament 2 to come out next month, and they had a Tekken disco evening, and they had all the composers on do an hour each DJing their own songs that they've made throughout the entire series. It was phenomenal. Loved it. I had my little party for one in my flat. I'm going to be finishing off Azura's Wrath. I've got quite a lot of games outstanding that I need to start getting through, and one is Sorcery for the PS3, again a motion title where you're a wizard and you're waving your wand around with your move controller. 30 Flights of Loving, I've got to get through that as well. Mine's going to be generally catching up with stuff that I've overspent on and need to kind of rein it in a little bit before my plethora of racing games comes out, starting with F1 2012 later next month.
Oh, exciting.
So, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Thanks, Ben, as ever, for coming along and managing to shut me up before I wobble on ever and ever and ever.
It's been a pleasure as always, Simon.
It has indeed, and we will not leave it quite as long next time because we'll actually be a bit more organised. Or I might actually turn up. That would be good. That would be a good start. So, take care of yourselves, everyone. Toodle pips, and we'll see you for episode 4 of Grumpy Old Mendo Gaming. Same old theme comes out.
Has there been a budget cut?
Yeah.